Good morning, ladies. My name is Jill Thornton, and I am here today because we are having a conference about Imago Dei. We are made in His image. And I would like to share with you how Christ showed me in a very personal way that He loves me, and He loves my entire family and my children, even before they were born, when they were still in the womb. My story is the embodiment of Romans 8:28. All things work together for good to them that love God. He worked in a miraculous way in my life, and I say miraculous because it began with my sin. But even so, Christ's love abounds. His mercy endures forever. I was 20 years old and in Bible college when I became pregnant. The father was a young man I had been dating, but we were unequally yoked. And I didn't know just how different we were until we had to have serious discussions about a baby. And I had not been following the Lord. I had not been in the Word every day, even though I was at Bible college. I was just having fun, I thought, and just wasting time. But through talking to him, I realized just how different we were and that there was no way that we could raise a child together because I was a believer and he was not. And I knew it would go very badly for me, for him, for our families, and most importantly, for this child. I did not want to raise a child in a home that had a believer for one parent and an unbeliever for another. Even in my most backslidden state, I knew that if my child's walk with the Lord were ever hindered because of me and the choices that I made, that I couldn't forgive myself. What made matters worse is I felt like there was no one I could speak to about it. I was going to Bible college. My dad was teaching there. I felt like all my friends would shun me. My church would shun me, and my parents would never look at me the same. And that was the worst part. My dad knew something was wrong, because parents always know. And after church one evening, in the parking lot, he would not let me leave until I told him what was wrong. So I told him I was pregnant, and after a short time, he hugged me. And we went home and we told my mother, and we decided that the next day we would, I had to go to church to tell my pastor because he was also the president of my school. So now my pastor was involved. when I woke up the next morning, however, my dad had already left. He had already gone to the church, to the school to tell my pastor himself, which was one of the most compassionate things he ever did for me. I was so scared and I was so humiliated, and he stood in the way for me, and I'll never forget it. So then when I did sit down and speak with my pastor, he asked me a little bit about the father, and after some communication, he eventually asked me if I had ever considered adoption. I was very hurt and offended by this because I wanted to raise this baby. But having known everything I had previously said, I knew in my heart that it would be very bad for the baby. And so after much prayer and consideration, I began to really consider it. And during this time, I also heard a guest preacher say something incredibly profound that I've never forgotten, and I have applied it to my life ever since. He said, life, especially when you're a Christian, is not only about choosing between what's good and bad, but it's about choosing between what's good and what's best. And I was pretty sure at this point that adoption was the path I was supposed to take. Mainly because I was a believer and the father was not. But I had one massive issue. I was really afraid that I was giving up on my responsibilities as a mother. This was no one else's job. It was mine and mine alone. I sinned. This was a consequence. And this was a consequence that everyone could see. So I was also afraid. I'd never could remember reading in the Bible a biblical example about adoption. But then I heard a sermon about Moses, and I had never really paid attention to his mother. But I began to dig in my Bible every day, and I read again about her. She did not give Moses to Pharaoh's daughter. She did not know what would happen to Moses. She gave Moses to God. She gave her baby boy to God. Just think about that for a moment. She put him in a basket and sent him down a river. What faith she had. She trusted God, and we got Moses. So I knew I had to just trust God and let him do the choosing. So my parents and I finally met with an adoption lawyer, and she mentioned something called open adoption, which I had never heard of. And what open adoption is you typically know the state in which they live. You know their first names. You can know their occupation. And you typically receive anywhere from 1 to 2 letters and pictures a year. And that sounded wonderful to me because I had to know that he was in a Christian home. I had that. Otherwise, what was the point? This was the entire point, was to know he was raised in a Christian home. So then I faced the biggest challenge of my life. How can anyone possibly pick a stranger to raise their child? And the only answer to that is prayer. Lots and lots of prayer. Digging into God's word, let him speak to you. I had to know that it was God that was doing the choosing. I absolutely had to. So I started reading in 1 Samuel, and I read 1 Samuel over and over and over. And finally, I wrote down in a prayer journal, I said, Jesus, my prayer for this baby is that the mother has prayed Hannah's prayer, that she has promised you that if you give her a son, she will give him back to you to follow and serve you all the days of his life. And I finally had a little bit of peace. And ladies, God will absolutely give you peace when you are searching and you are simply trying to do his will. When you truly want to know, he will show you. Now, even though I had peace, my sister, who is my best friend and my ultimate confidant, did not. She had just had her first baby, and she could not see how I could do this. But it did not come from a place of judgment. It came from a place of compassion, because she thought that I was being pressured into this by my family and by my pastor. So I just told her, April, I said, you just need to pray, because God is not going to tell me one thing and then tell you a complete different thing. So I just asked her to pray, to truly pray. Not that I would change my mind, but that she would also know God's will, that he would show it to her personally. At this point, I was quite far along. I was 37 weeks and no family had been chosen. There had already been a couple of families that were interested that we spoke to the attorney and my pastor about, but I just did not have any peace about it whatsoever, and neither did my mom. And that's usually a good indicator. If, you know, someone who you know is praying exactly right along with you, if we both have the same feeling. We were so sure that we never even met with the families. We just didn't have peace. But I was obviously getting very worried, because I was afraid, what if I went into labor early? Now, I was becoming very confused, because I told my mom at the dinner table, I said, what? I know this is what God has shown me to do. What happens if I go into labor early? And she just calmly looked at me and smiled, and she said, "Jill, God is not toying with you." She said, "Maybe He just wants you to be okay with whatever He has for you." And so I went to my room and I prayed. I prayed a lot. And by the next morning, I had truly, truly for the first time, committed this child to God in my heart. And I prayed, "Lord, if you want me to keep this baby, I absolutely will. And I will make sure that he knows you and that he will follow you." And basically, I prayed Hannah's prayer. And within 2 days of that prayer, my pastor called me and said that I needed to come in immediately. He had had a call from a pastor friend of his out in California. He had called my pastor asking if he knew of anyone that had an unplanned pregnancy and was considering adoption. And there was a couple at his church that had been praying for 12 years to adopt. And my pastor said, indeed, he did know of someone, but he asked his pastor friend, "How serious are they? Because this baby's going to be born in no more than 2 weeks." He said they were absolutely serious. And the next part of the story that was the conversation that was relayed to me, my pastor's eyes swelled with tears. He said that the woman was a young woman who had been my pastor's son's best friend in New Jersey growing up more than 20 years prior. And he said that he had no idea that she couldn't have children, and he had not spoken to her in quite a while, but he and his family had so much love and admiration for her, and that she truly loved the Lord with all of her heart. And she had asked if she could write a letter to me, and I said, "Yes, absolutely." Her name is Shelley. And when I read her letter for the first time, I just knew in my heart that she was the one. I just absolutely knew it. So I told my pastor, and she and her husband flew out to Powell, Tennessee to meet me and my family. Now, this is where the months of my faith and the years of Shelley's faith became evidence that God loved both of us and that He loved this baby. He loved Shelley, He loved me, and He loved this baby still in the womb. When we met her, she smiled so big at all of us, but she especially hugged my sister. And she said to her, "I know what you're going through." And my sister, who was still very uneasy with the whole thing, she kind of snapped at her and said, "How can you possibly know what this feels like for me?" And then Shelley told her that it was because her own younger sister had become pregnant at 17 and had chosen another family to adopt her son. And she said it with so much compassion that my sister wept, and she fell in love with Shelley from that moment on. Shelley truly knew exactly what my entire family was facing. She knew how hard it was on my parents, who were about to lose their first grandson, and my sister, who is about to lose her first nephew, and me, who is about to grieve over the loss of a son. She knew the immense grief that we were about to face so much that she had been praying for us, for me and my entire family, for the past 12 years. Because she knew in order for her prayer to be answered, another family was going to have to face much grief and sorrow. Then Shelley told me, so that was the answered prayer number one. God gave my sister peace in an incredible way. None of us knew this about Shelley. That was our first answered prayer. And then Shelley told us that for the past 10 of the 12 years that she had been praying to adopt, that she had been praying that my pastor would have a hand in it, because of the immense love that she felt for him. That was answered prayer number two. Then, this was not a prayer of mine, but it was like an extra little hug from Jesus that I desperately needed at the time. She told me that she was a history teacher at a Christian school and that she loved to read. We had so much in common. To this day, we will talk books for hours. We will text each other books or have you read this? Have you read that? At the time, I had been a history and English major as well. Then years later, we found out actually that we even had the same English teacher in high school, 10 years apart in two completely different states, and he was the one that instilled a love of reading in both of our hearts. See, there's these little answered prayers that are ongoing, that are still coming up. So then the day came, my baby was born. I hadn't named him because I wanted Shelly to have that honor. I could have, but I wanted her to be able to have all of the things that a mother who birthed a child would be able to do. She named him Brendan. And after she held him in the nursery, she came up to my room and she hugged me tight and she was sobbing and she said, "He's my little Samuel. He's my little Samuel." And she actually told me that she almost named him Samuel, but she didn't want anybody giving him a nickname. So she went with Brendan. So that was answered prayer number three. I showed her in my prayer journal that that was the very first prayer that I had written in this entire process. Within the first 2 weeks of being home, I had already received a huge package full of pictures and a letter. Over the years, Shelly went above and beyond with packages and letters similar to this one. Eventually, I even received pictures that he had drawn for me. She encouraged me to send him anything I wanted, any letters that I wanted. I knew everything about him. I knew everything about her. I knew exactly where they lived. And she never kept me at arm's length, ever. I even got to see a video of him being baptized. He now works with Young Life in California, and he's going to college. And I even got to meet him in person in January of 2020. God gave Brendan a Christian home. He gave me peace and grace that I cannot begin to describe, along with a double blessing of allowing me to be a small part of Brendan's life and to see him walk with the Lord. And he answered Shelly's prayer for a son. In closing, there are four things that I really would like to stress. I've shown you how we all experienced the love of Jesus throughout this process, and it is still ongoing, as I said. But I would also like to plead with you young ladies to please not learn the meaning of Romans 8:28 the hard way, like I did. Don't waste time. Spend time with the Lord daily. Talk with Him, and He will become your dearest, closest friend. You are His bride, His beloved, and you are made in His image. Yes, He made all things work together for good for me and my entire family, but my sin affected everyone around me. The path of adoption was fraught with suffering, with pain, with trauma. Ladies, I plead with you, stay pure. Don't look your future husband in the eye and have to apologize in tears for not waiting on him. Number two, don't assume anything with your family. I was scared to death to talk to them, and they proved through their actions that I should have run to them from the beginning. Jesus is my rock, but he is theirs also. And I was astounded, truly astounded, by the level of love and compassion and mercy that they showed me. They helped sustain me when I couldn't stand. And we held each other up, both literally and figuratively, in prayer. Give your family the chance to be a blessing to you, because they will. And ladies, I can't stress this enough. On behalf of those who are in situations like this or in any kind of trouble, please pray for them. Don't gossip. I heard everything that people said. It always gets back. I am eternally grateful for those who stood by me, who sat by me in church, who came and visited me. And unfortunately, I have a somewhat fixed opinion in my head of those who talked about me instead of to me. Ladies, if you know someone that is hurting or struggling, talk to them. Pray for them especially. Be their friend, because loneliness is a very, very dark place. Be a light for them. And I promise you, they will never forget it, and it will make a huge difference. And finally, ladies, in the times in which we live, especially now with the overturn of Roe versus Wade and the demonic shrieking about it, do not listen to the lies of the devil. And there are many. In Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25, the Bible says, "There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." We are told over and over that we should put ourselves first, that it is our right to choose, that Christians only care about babies until they're born, that we don't care about the mothers. Ladies, this is a lie straight from the pit. Do not listen to it. It is not true. I don't know of one church that doesn't support their local pregnancy crisis centers. And I don't believe a person should use the name of Jesus if they don't have compassion for women and men in these situations. I urge you, ladies, if you or anyone you know is in need of someone to talk to, pray with, or give you practical guidance as well, please contact the church office. There are women here who would love to help you. Please don't walk alone. We love you, and may God bless our time here today.